I'm still thinking about what I want to say about Craig Sager and whether I want to say anything. I didn't talk about the election because I just felt like it was sort of like, you know, hey guys, we all hate Donald Trump and we all think the same thing. It's sort of like pandering. And with Sager, I've never met him.
Yeah.
I can't tell a story about how he saved my kid from a burning building or anything like that. But it is really deeply upsetting to me. The way that I've approached stuff like this so far, it feels like sometimes when podcast hosts talk about issues like what happened, it's just sort of lip service, and it almost doesn't seem like it's coming from a genuine place.
Sure, just to touch upon it, because you covered the NBA pretty much, so.
Yeah, it feels kind of hollow. That's how I've approached most things in the past, but, you know, even though I don't know him, it for whatever reason, like, emotionally impacted me.
Sure.
So, if you guys want to say something, you guys can do that now. But, like I said, I have complicated feelings about whether or not I feel like it's my place to say anything about it.
For sure.
Cool.
Do you guys have any...
Do you want to do a mock one where you just kind of say something so that we can, like, kind of just flow into it?
Okay.
Just give me a Craig Sager.
Well, that was really it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I said a bunch of the stuff that I was thinking about saying. Like, I don't have a story about him running into a burning building and saving my child. And I've never, you know, met the guy. But I guess it speaks to who he was that despite that, it still feels bad and I'm still going to miss him.
I think for me, you know, growing up watching Inside the NBA, like, Craig Sager was a part of that close-knit crew of Chuck, Kenny, EJ, and they all, you could tell from their chemistry together that everybody was so close with each other and there was a camaraderie there. And outside of just the flashy suits that he'd wear, obviously we don't know the guy, but just having grown up with Inside the NBA, we also kind of grew up with, you know, Craig Sager, and just noticed from his interactions with people, the way he treated people, the way he interacted with his coworkers, that he seemed like a very humble, upstanding dude. And even the times when his son would fill in for him, and you could just see the way that the players and the different coaches would just send their love to him and just their respects, that clearly this is like a very well-respected man. And just losing him in 2016 with everything that's gone on has been kind of strange and tough. And in a way, it's almost like, oh, there's a part of your childhood or youth, at least for me. So, Alan, I don't know about if you have anything to say.
Yeah. I was watching the Bucks and Bulls game, and at halftime, Kenny was talking about this one time where they were going to grab dinner with each other after a game. And Sager showed up a little bit late to dinner, and Kenny felt pretty exhausted from working in the studio all day. And, Craig told him, yeah, I'm really tired too, because I was just doing chemo for 6 hours. And the fact that he would go and grab dinner with Kenny after all of that and still, you know, have enough energy really shows a lot, I feel like, about his character. And the one theme that everyone has talked about today is how much he cared about people. And, you know, it's obviously very inspirational. And as far as me personally, it's like, I would love it if everyone I knew, whether it's coworkers, friends, and family, you know, could say half the amount of good things about me as all these guys are saying about Craig.
Yeah, it seems sort of trivial to compare what's going on in my life to what was going on there. And I guess that's sort of a good thing, I've been tired, and I've talked about on the podcast a couple of times, like, oh man, it's been really hard setting up this A-team thing. And, you know, the setup has been difficult, but it's not like I'm recording podcasts after going through chemo.
Right.
You know, I guess it's, you know, it's
keeps things in perspective.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, reminds us of what is important about life. I think if Craig was just a great broadcaster, what people are talking about now with him is who he was and the lives he impacted and his character. No one's like, oh, we lost, you know, a great voice who wore a lot of super colorful suits. Like, you know, anyone could put on a super colorful suit.
Yeah.
Anyone can host a podcast. And, I guess we'll start there because, you know, speaking of just anyone just grabbing a microphone and starting to record,
here's us.
Yeah, you're listening to Almighty Fallen, the Almighty Podcast, and we're really going to have to put our podcasting skills to the test and put aside, you know, the tragic loss of Craig Sager and still be upbeat and still enjoy the game of basketball. I think that, you know, again, this sounds kind of trite, but I think that that's, you know, that's what he wanted. It's just, even while he was going through chemo, just, you know, let the show go on. So that's what we're about to do, and we're about to talk about the Lakers. But first, let me more formally introduce my guest today, Alan Riley, Jonathan Hernandez from the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I've talked about how each show that's going to be on the A-Team is a show that I can personally vouch for. And, you know, sometimes when you put together networks, you know, there's a quality drop-off. But if anything, the quality has greatly increased since adding some of these A-Team shows, and the Lakers are one of the podcasts responsible for that. So, yeah, how about you guys introduce yourself, say a little bit about the Lakers Legacy Podcast, and then we can start talking about your soft, fluffy Charmin soft team and how bad it is and how bad everyone on the team is.
Sure. This is
how much better they would be with Chris Stapps.
This is Jonathan Hernandez. You can follow me on Twitter at JHUN88, and also follow us on Twitter as a podcast at Lakers Legacy Pod. Once again, we're from the Lakers Legacy Podcast. We are glad and excited to be part of the A-Team. The network's great, the other podcasts are great, and it's good to just be affiliated with a bigger network, almost like we're forming Transformers or Avengers together. So it's fun. Alan?
Yeah. What's up, guys? My name's Alan Riley. You can follow me on Twitter at Atak Riley. That's A-T-A-K-R-I-L-E-Y. Yeah, it's great to be here chatting with you again, Chris, and definitely excited as this season has truly gotten underway.
And hey, guys, this is Timofey Mozgov. I'm also here on this podcast today, and I would like to say that I enjoy the Lakers Legacy and Almighty Pollen very much. And I would give them a 5-star rating absolutely on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcasts. So thanks, Timofey. I appreciate that. I'm sure that they appreciate that.
I think we need to get the real Timofey in there. Timofey, what did you think of that impression?
I don't think that sound like me because, it's not, that's not how I talk.
There you go. All right.
So yeah, that's just something that Lakers Legacy podcast guys do. You know, they read their they read their 5-star ratings with different impressions. It's fun, and it's worked out for you guys. You know, you guys are up there. You got like 100 5-star ratings or something like that.
Yeah. Or the people who hate it have learned to love it, and the people who love it are like more for some reason. So it's strange, but yeah. Keeps things upbeat and lively in case, like, during the shows where we're like feeling down and the Lakers have lost. So there you go.
And that's been happening a lot lately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
It almost seems like someone stepped in and replaced all of the Lakers from the start of the year when they had a 10-10 start. It seems like someone's coming in and doing really bad impressions of them. So
I mean, yeah.
After their loss to the Nets, which the fact that they lost to the Nets is a statement in of itself. But after that loss, what does that leave your record at as of right now?
We are 10-18 right now.
So,
and we are the eighth worst. Eight straight losses. And we are the eighth worst team now in the NBA. Like 2 weeks ago, when Alan and I were in Chicago to actually watch the Lakers beat the Bulls at the United Center, at that point, the Lakers were ninth in the West, right behind like the 12 and 11 Portland Trailblazers. Now we are eighth worst. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there was a point at which the Lakers looked like they may in fact be playoff bound. That's looking increasingly less likely. But, you know, even while you guys were riding high, I know that you guys tend to get pretty lit on the Lakers Legacy podcast, but even as you were getting lit, did you have an understanding that maybe it's not such a terrible thing that this team is losing a bit? Because that top three pick, if you can manage to hold on to that, I'm pretty sure it converts into 2 second rounders. I guess I'm curious to know whether or not you had this understanding, like, yeah, we could use another guy. We could use one more young star to build our core around.
You know, tanking has not even been in my mindset just because it's a top three protected pick and we would need to be so bad that, I mean, Chris, I mean, not to bring up your Mavericks, but I mean, you guys are like in there. You're like right in that mix, right? To get a lot like a top three. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I haven't played NBA 2K very much this year. I haven't played 2K17 very often, but when I do, it's with a player created Markelle Fultz on the Mavs. So
I mean, Markelle Fultz is great. You know, I liked the prospects this year in terms of Lonzo Ball, Markelle Fultz, Jason Tatum. Josh Jackson, I believe, is a wing player.
Jason Tatum was really great in 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, he's funny, dude.
So handsome, but too.
What I was saying is, like, honestly, to be realistically, like, tanking has not come into my head at all this year, even with this latest stretch, because from my mindset, I don't even want to have the hope, even if we were like the third worst team, that we'd be able to keep that pick, because it's just relying on so much chance again. And we've managed to keep it the last 2 years that I think our luck has run out in that respect, even if somehow we end the year as the third worst team, which I don't think we're going to do, because looking contextually, if we look deeper into the Lakers skid, it has been due to actually factors. Like, we can say that the league has caught up to the Lakers, sure, adjustments have been made, yeah, but at the same time, the biggest thing is the Lakers just had a bunch of injuries to some of their key players, and mainly D'Angelo Russell, Uncle P, and then now the ancillary parts like Tarik Black, Jose Calderon, etc. I mean, people will say they're useless, but they did help keep rotations intact, and that's when you saw Luke Walton trying to keep his prized bench unit, which was like number one in the league in scoring, together at the expense of just trotting out a team that was more unified and could be able to withstand different units and actually try and win. So for me, tanking has not been part of the conversation, and I don't think it will, even if the Lakers continue to lose, which I think at the end of the day, and we all thought this at the beginning of the year, the Lakers just exceeded our expectations like the first month. We've always seen this team as a 30-33 win team. So at this point with this recent skid, it still looks like they're on pace to do that. And at 33 wins, I think you're going to be what, 7th, 8th worst, which is where we're at right now. And at that point, it's like we're going to have to jump into the lottery in order to get like a Markelle Fultz or whatever and keep our top three protected picks. So Alan, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with that. I haven't thought about us keeping our draft pick at all this year. In the past couple of years, I've paid extremely close attention to college basketball and have just tried to catch every single prospect as much as possible. And this year, I've pretty much just been watching UCLA games. So, I think in my mind, I just want us to win as much as possible, which at this point is a lot less than where we were at about a month ago. But, I wouldn't say those are my expectations. I agree with Jonathan as far as why these losses have come. And, you know, if you look at the beginning of this 8-game losing streak, they were in several of those games and kind of lost in heartbreaking fashion, or just that inability to close. Like, for example, against Memphis, we were so shorthanded, and I really thought we were going to win that game and it was going to feel great, and they lost. And I think mentally, this is where, like, the mental softness comes in. You have enough of those discouraging, demoralizing moments, it just builds up on a young team, and at some point the guys just seem like they're expecting that to happen at the end again and again. It's like, I don't want to be hyperbolic, but it's like they're kind of traumatized from those experiences. And when you have so many good unexpected moments to start the season, season, as much losing as they've done over the last few years, it's like they forgot what it felt like to lose. And now that they're back in that mode, it's just difficult for them to climb their way out of that.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of reasons why the Memphis Grizzlies, I think, is an interesting comparison to draw. Why the Memphis Grizzlies have been able to sort of withstand some of the injuries that they've had to key guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lost their point guard, Mike Conley, and though you guys lost D'Angelo Russell, I think that one key difference you can point at is that while Timofey Mozgov, I think, has been a pleasant surprise, he's not quite Marc Gasol.
Yep.
I think you would agree with that.
Yep.
So, you know, if you want to point at key problems, the key differences between that 10 out of 20, 500 record team that started the year and this team, putting aside just all the injuries, of course, and the roster changes that have happened because of that, the things that have really degraded are defense and late game execution. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? And do you feel like once you get guys back, once Luke Walton has the rotations that he, you know, felt so good about at the start of the season, once those guys are back, do you think that you are potentially going to start seeing that 500 team back again? Or are you pretty convinced at this point that this is just a different Lakers team than it looked like at the start of the season?
Well, you know, Al and I were talking about this, like, our last episode, where we were like, do we have to undergo another full paradigm shift again and view this team moving forward just as another tanking team? Or do we take a little bit of the competitiveness we saw in the first month and put it and find a happy medium? I think for me, and one of the, I forgot which Lakers said it, but he was like, we were playing bad defense at the start of the year too. We were just hitting shots and our guys were all healthy and our offense was humming. So I prescribe to that in terms of, I think the defense has been an issue the entire year. And if you look at the Lakers roster, there's, I mean, you can tell why. We don't really have any plus defenders outside of Brandon Ingram, who you're relying on a rookie to be your, one of your best defenders, and Larry Nance, pretty much. Like, Mozgov's good, but he's only serviceable against, like, really big lineups. And most of the time, you know, Luke is only giving him, like, 15, 20 minutes because he can't keep up with these faster-paced teams. He can't contain the pick and roll on defense, yada, yada. So I think defense is always going to be a problem, and until we get some more help in that respect, some better defensive minded players, I think it'll continue to be that way. Granted, it's night and day, the difference between defense last year, just in terms of the eye test and how much effort the guys are putting right now defensively. When, I guess, if we're comparing the second half to the first half, I think just losing the bodies is having an effect. Like, the guys seem to not communicate as well on defense, like the rotations aren't there at all, they're not helping. And I think the size issue is starting to come into play with the Lakers not being able to contain guys like Rudy Gobert and bigs like that. So I think defensively has always been an issue, but it's been more exacerbated just because of the D'Angelo Russell, Uncle P being out, because also Uncle P has been one of our biggest perimeter defenders, which is hilarious to say, but he has been. And so losing his defensive intensity has kind of affected everybody else. And it's almost like a chain reaction, kind of. And even on the offense, obviously, losing Uncle P and D'Angelo Russell has been even greater in terms of the effect and impact on the rest of the guys. But I think one of my biggest disappointments, and we've talked about this recently, is that we thought that the Lakers were fully capable to withstand some injuries like this because they were so deep, right? That's what having that deep bench meant, that if one guy went down, then okay, we got Jordan Clarkson to step up. And unfortunately, Jordan Clarkson hasn't stepped up with more responsibility, more minutes. In fact, we feel like he's regressed a little bit this season. His three-point shot is pretty much non-existent at this point. He's not getting to the free throw line. So we expected Jordan Clarkson and D'Angelo Stead to step up and really be that guy and make it a seamless transition, but unfortunately that just hasn't happened. You know, Lou Will has been the one guy through this entire season who's like, okay, I'm gonna try and put the team on my back, and you can't put all of that weight on Lou Will. You know, he's playing like,
he has a really small back.
Yeah, he's a really small back. I mean, he's putting up career numbers, which is crazy because this is like his, I don't know, probably 10th year in the NBA or something, and he's putting up career numbers, but you can't put all of that weight on Lou Will. So, and then obviously offensively, you can just tell that Julius Randle is lost without D'Angelo Russell, you know?
So, Alan,
yeah.
Do you feel like at this point Luke Walton should maybe consider breaking up that bench unit or playing it against starters? Because I think that correlates really closely to that other idea that Jonathan brought up, which is where did Clarkson go, right? And I feel like Clarkson, the reason why he was selected in the second round isn't necessarily because he was so much worse than other guys, because, I mean, he is talented, but just because of some of his physical dimensions, just because his arms aren't spectacularly long, he's not spectacularly explosive, I just feel like it makes a lot of sense that he wouldn't be able to explode against the more dynamic athletes that you typically see in NBA starting lineups. So, yeah, do you move away from that bench unit? And if so, aren't you just sort of holding Clarkson back because of limitations that I think are pretty much beyond his control?
Yeah, I've actually spent a little bit of time thinking about that too, because when we put Jordan Clarkson on the bench to start the season, you know, we were all pretty shocked by that, and it panned out pretty well to start. But yeah, maybe he does need to start with that energy right in the beginning of the game to get in a rhythm. I think a lot of times in that second unit, he starts to press and he feels like he needs to be the ultimate scorer, and he is, like you said, very limited in what he can do. And when he's out there running with Lou Williams, I mean, they're very similar players in terms of wanting to attack. And like Jonathan said, I'm also pretty disappointed in Jordan, because, I mean, you're a shooting guard and you're shooting less than 30% from 3-point range. That's unacceptable. The one area where he's improved, I would say, is his defense. And maybe if you have him in that starting lineup guarding other starting twos, that could be beneficial since the Lakers defense is so poor. So yeah, I would agree that it might be worth trying. I know we've also talked about possibly switching Julius and Larry Nance, as far as getting Larry in that starting lineup. And I think Larry fits wherever you want him. But if you move Julius to the bench, it could completely demoralize him, because that guy's body language is so negative right now. It looks like he really wants to just punch himself in the head every single time he makes a mistake. And if you quote unquote demote him to the bench, similarly to last year, it might really crush his ego.
And that's one of the things that you focused on your last episode, was how you might, if you're Luke Walton, communicate to Julius Randle, hey, I think that you might be better off coming off the bench in a way that doesn't just sound like, hey, I think that we should replace you as far as our go-to guy at the power forward position with Larry Nance, because it seemed like you guys had a lot of concerns about whether or not that would be something that was even possible for Luke Walton, as good of a communicator as he's been. It just might be impossible, I guess you guys are saying, it would be impossible for Luke Walton to say it or make that change in a way that Randle doesn't respond to by just sort of mentally chipping or breaking a little bit.
You know, I think we're still trying to wipe away the muck of Byron Scott, that part of us is still like, oh, I don't know if Luke can get through to him. But now that I think more about it, I know the last episode we were like, oh, Julius is so mentally fragile that I don't think this is going to work. But if anybody can make it work, I think it would be Luke. And it seems like, you know, Alan, we've talked about how Julius Randle and Luke's relationship in particular seems so strong, just in the way that Luke Walton has defended him time and time again. Like when they lost to Sacramento and Julius had a bad game, or they talked, or one of the reporters asked Julius about, you know, Luke Walton sticking up for him and getting tossed out for him, you know, and Julius just smiled and said, no, I love that guy. And then there was another game where Julius played terribly, and at the end of the game, they asked Luke Walton about Julius, and Luke Walton pretty much said, you know, Julius is an important guy. Like, he's one of our leaders, and it's okay if he goes through these growing pains, but pretty much just saying, like, he puts so much emphasis on Julius Randle, because I think that question came when a reporter asked him, we saw you guys squabbling on the sidelines. Like, what did you tell him? And are you mad at Julius? And Luke was like, no, I'm not mad at him. I just put a lot of responsibility on him because he's one of our leaders and we see him that way. So I have to be hard on him sometimes. And he understands that. So I just like that they have open communication. So if it so happens and it comes down to Luke Walton asking Julius to come off the bench, I think that he can make it happen. So because of their established relationship. So Alan, I don't know if you had anything to add.
Yeah. I mean, I think when that, if that conversation were to happen, Julius would accept it. And I'm sure he would understand where Luke is coming from. My question is, when it comes to the actual game and he comes off that bench, will he mentally be able to get over whatever hurdles he's creating in his own mind? You know, like, if you were a fly on the wall in that conversation, I don't think Julius would resist it. And I think he would put his trust in Luke. But again, when it comes time to perform, will it be the same attitude?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Well, so I wanted to hear what you guys might think about this possibility. I feel like, you know, maybe the way to go with all of this, I think that there is a way that you could approach that where you could explain it to Randle strategically. Well, explain the strategy to Randle in a way that wouldn't actually be dishonest. So a starting lineup of Mozgov, Larry Nance Jr., and Luol Deng, and then you start Ingram at shooting guard and then have D'Angelo at point guard. So this, you know, gives you that ability to sort of switch 2 through 4 with Ingram and Deng and Nance, and then you can play pick and rolls pretty much straight up with D'Angelo and Mozgov. And then off the bench, you sort of try to do what a team, the Grizzlies, have done with Zach Randolph playing the center position. So basically now your center position is built around Lou Williams and Randle sort of pushing the break offensively, and Randle just sort of dominating bench centers who just physically can't deal with his heft and his size and his skill. I think that that would work really well as you start to see these guys coming back. And once you add Clarkson to that, maybe Tariq Black into another piece there. And then, man, I don't, what is up with, why is Ron Artest on this team?
I don't know.
But Artest, I mean, speaking of guys who you wonder why they're not on the Lakers, I'm not sure if you guys noticed, but the Pelicans picked up Brown, who was, you know, switching between the Lakers and the D-League team in LA last year, but they decided to waive Brown and go with Artest.
Yeah.
But I mean, Brown, I feel like, could step into that bench lineup with Lou Williams, Clarkson, Brown, and then Julius Randle, and you sort of play through Randall's strengths there.
Well, in your scenario, Uncle P would be with the bench, so we'd have that forward spot filled, so.
Oh, yeah. I just forgot about Swaggy P.
Yep.
How did I forget about Swaggy P?
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I need to call Iggy Azalea and let her know how I forgot about Swaggy P there. I think she could use the help. So, yeah, I just wanted to see what you guys thought about that possibility. Or maybe, since I forgot about Swaggy P, moving him in to where Ingram was, you know, playing Ingram, Deng, and then Larry Nance Jr.
I think it would work fine just because Ingram, I think, would benefit from playing with a guy like D'Angelo, and I think Randle plays really well with Uncle P, so bringing them both from the starting lineup to the bench wouldn't hurt that dynamic, and it might even help because then Randle will also be with Lou Williams, who's a pretty good shooter from three as well, and most of Randle's assists this year have come from transition and finding spot-up shooters and throwing these nifty behind-the-back passes to three-point shooters all around the court. So I think he'd be fine in the second unit where he can just focus on being, you know, Julius Randle, Tasmanian Randle, whatever. And I think Nance would just bring some more stability to the starting lineup. The only thing I'm worried about is Ingram, just because I don't know if we're putting too much onus on D'Angelo Russell to run the entire offense in the starting lineup, because if you look at 2 through 5, pretty much outside of D'Angelo Russell, you got Ingram, Deng, Nance, and Mozgov, and none of those guys can really create a shot right now. So I think that's where I'd be worried. So maybe I'd still stick in Uncle P there just to add some shot creation. But outside of that, I think it could possibly work, and I wouldn't fault Luke for trying that out. And I wouldn't fault Luke for just swapping the Randall Nance thing and seeing how that goes a little bit, because you know Nance can play wherever he's put. It's just, can Randall get on board if Luke tells him, like, hey, I think you'd be more productive with this bench unit. So what about you, Alan?
Yeah, I think keeping Swaggy P in the starting lineup would be pretty crucial. We're already prone to getting really slow offensive starts. And like you said, if it's D'Angelo with the other four guys, he's pretty much going to be your scorer, and that's about it. Because Nance can score, but he isn't aggressive enough. And I think that's, even if he were starting and you were relying on him to put the ball in the hoop, he's going to pass up too many opportunities. And so, yeah, I think, and plus D'Angelo and Swaggy, somewhat ironically, have really great chemistry on court. But Randall off the bench, I could see that working. He shouldn't at least feel as much pressure to score if you have Lou Williams out there who can get hot like whenever he wants.
Well, I feel like to make this work, you would need to say to Randall, like, this is your lineup.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, not only is this your lineup, but this is your chance to be Draymond Green at center.
Okay, that's true. Yeah.
Run this lineup, you know, alongside Lou Williams. And I mean, Lou Williams and Steph Curry, I think that there's a little bit of a talent disparity. Although with the way that Lou Williams has been playing, maybe not. but, you know, I mean, this is your chance to be like, you know what? Like, you really want to play like the Warriors.
Yeah.
Here's your chance to do it. You and Lou Williams go out there and dictate the pace and just blow teams off the court with your offensive firepower. And I feel like Randall could definitely do it offensively, and that defensively, you're not going to get slaughtered by most bench centers, unless you're facing like the Grizzlies or the Thunder and Enes Kanter is playing up against Randall, you know?
That's true. Yeah, I do think when it comes to saying, okay, Julius, we want you to take over and be more of a focal point, imagining him pushing the break, getting offensive rebounds, going coast to coast, that's awesome. That's perfect.
Coast to Kufos?
As far as him like doing work down in the post and being aggressive, I guess that's just where I get scared. You know, I don't know Julius Randle personally, but I'm imagining being told, okay, man, we want you to take over, and him really putting his head down and acting like a bull in the china shop and just getting kind of out of control. So I guess where I was coming from was, ironically, with that second unit, if he's with Lou Williams, it's like in some ways it takes off some pressure because Lou can score whenever he wants. But if Julius is put in the right position, obviously he can take advantage of the other team's second unit bigs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And touching on something that I think both of you guys mentioned briefly, which is D'Angelo Russell sort of needing to play alongside Swaggy P, which makes some sense to me ostensibly. If you decide to go with the starting lineup of Swaggy P and D'Angelo Russell, then you're grooming D'Angelo Russell for a bit of a role that's a little bit like Kyle Lowry's role in Toronto. I think that that's an interesting way to go about it. But the reason why I think that, you know, maybe isolating D'Angelo Russell as the man in the starting lineup is, ultimately, if you look at D'Angelo's game and you project it forward and you say, move over Kristaps, we have the superstar in this draft, the way that he would do that is by being James Harden, right? And functionally, that's what the Rockets do. They essentially put Harden out there with a bunch of guys who can capitalize off of his ball movement. And honestly, the thing I'm concerned about is D'Angelo's turnovers going from, you know, 3 a game to 6 a game. But I mean, this Lakers team right now is in trial mode anyways. And teaching D'Angelo how to run an offense, and by run an offense, I mean run the offense, like be sort of the center of their solar system, I suppose. I think that's a worthwhile exercise.
I agree with you in some respects, but I think the way that James Harden is excelling in Houston is that, and I don't know if the Lakers have this roster yet, and the reason why I put Uncle P there is because it does allow D'Angelo to playmake and have a safety valve, because Uncle P is like the only other guy in that lineup who can shoot. Otherwise, he's pitching it out to Luau Deng, who it's like a crapshoot every time he shoots it. Does he have enough arc or not? Or is it going to be flat or short? And then Larry Nance is, you know, he's still exploring his mid-range jump shot, and Timofey Mozgov can kind of hit an outside shot, but it's not
nail like, mid-rangers.
Yep, he can.
It's great.
But it's not exactly like a Warriors situation. And then if you put Brandon Ingram there, like he's still struggling to find his shot. So I think that's why I prefer Uncle P there. But I think in essence, I understand what you're saying in terms of like let D'Angelo kind of run the show without another guy like Randall who needs the ball. So in that respect, like I agree, but I don't know if we have the roster yet to allow him to necessarily do that. And I think Luke Walton's coming more from the Golden State Warriors way of thinking in terms of, you know, Steph Curry's the quote unquote point guard, but he also plays off ball as well. And we've seen a couple of times that D'Angelo Russell has played really well off ball as well, you know, just getting a bunch of down screens and elevator screens and him popping out for an open three. So I think that's essentially where Luke Walton eventually wants to see D'Angelo, like being a guy who is the point guard, but I don't know if we necessarily want him to be as dominant as James Harden in terms of his usage. That's just my opinion because that's what we've seen in terms of plays, and we also know that Luke Walton came from that system. So I don't know if Alan had any other thoughts.
Yeah, I think eventually when Brandon Ingram gets more comfortable and just seasoned in general, you could have him in that starting lineup, maybe even as, like after the All-Star break this year, where he's bringing the ball off the court as we've seen him do so much, and then D'Angelo can play off-ball similarly to Steph. So if you see Brandon Ingram in the starting lineup later in the year instead of Swaggy P, I would not be opposed to that. As far as right now, I don't think the time is right.
Sure. That makes sense. All of this would have to come alongside a dynamic shift, I think is what you said. Because, yeah, I think that was a good insight that would definitely be moving away from what the Warriors have been successful with so far this year. However, you know, that being said, it would be moving to a philosophy that has really worked for Mike D'Antoni. And I know you guys didn't see the best of Mike D'Antoni while he was in LA. But I think that there was a lot of reasons for that. And honestly, he was my second pick behind Thibodeau. And that doesn't look good for Coach of the Year. You know, I think that basically D'Antoni knows what he's doing when he's deciding, okay, this is our best option given our roster. So this is what we should go for. And that's my point. I think that, you know, if Walton is faced with this idea where, okay, we're not winning games playing the Warriors way, you can either force yourself to continue playing in a certain play style and using a certain playbook, or you can get creative. And it's hard to ask a rookie coach to do that, especially one who's, I mean, Luke Walton was a Warriors assistant coach and then he was the Lakers head coach. He didn't have any other stops. There's not really any experience he can draw from beyond just as a player and observing from afar. So maybe it would be a little bit difficult, but I feel like if what you're saying is true and the Lakers really want to continue to, you know, try to win every game they can and not sort of tank, then that's the method. I mean, that's, you're going to have to start thinking outside of the box, I guess is what I am thinking as far as what the Lakers need to do. Otherwise, you can keep running your Warrior system and it'll round into part, but you're going to lose a ton of games. And again, maybe that's okay because you would get that third pick. But if you guys want to win, I think you probably need to try something different.
And I think this recent skid is going to tell a lot about, well, how does Luke handle adversity as a rookie coach? Is he going to pivot? Is he a type of coach that knows when to pivot at the right time, or is he going to try and stick things out? I think right now it's still honestly too early to say, just because, you know, the D'Angelo Russell and Uncle P have just come back and they've only played, in terms of their normal allotment of minutes, they've only played one game really where they played above 20 minutes, you know? So I think right now Luke Walton is still seeing, like, can we get back to who we were, or has the league really caught up with us? Do I really need to shift everything and be more creative, think outside the box? Because I'm sure for him, he's like assessing that for himself too. He's like, is what we saw real in the first half or not? And if it wasn't real, then maybe I do need to tweak some things, and we'll have to see if he's the type of coach that really can be innovative and think on the fly and stuff like that. So
sure. What do you think, Alan? I mean, are you interested in seeing the Lakers try something else? Is that something that you want to see? Or would you rather the Lakers continue, you know, to say, okay, we're not the Warriors yet, but if we keep trying to be, maybe we'll get there?
Right. I agree with Jonathan. I think at this point it's a bit early to make a significant change. You know, D'Angelo got hurt, I think it was right after we played the Bulls at home, just before Thanksgiving. So that means he had played 14 games. And since then, well, he's been back for three. So that means he's played 17 out of the 28 games. And I just don't think that's a large enough sample size to make a drastic change. That being said, if we're looking at...
I think you should fire Luke Walton.
You know, towards the end of January, if we're still looking like this, then I don't think you can help but tinker with things a bit. And as far as Luke is concerned, I do think he's open-minded. And the fact that he's apparently calling Phil Jackson somewhat regularly and getting advice from him as far as coaching goes means that he's willing to hear various opinions on how to do things. So again, if we're looking at another 15 to 20 games of us losing at this clip, I would not be surprised actually if he made some changes in terms of getting away from how the Warriors do things, just little by little, and then see if it works.
So between Luke Walton speaking in a really deep voice and always talking on the phone with Phil Jackson, who also has a very deep voice, do you feel like Luke Walton, when he's out in LA on the beaches and he's swimming underwater, do you think that he can hear whales? You know, because whales communicate,
you know,
through really deep like frequencies.
Through those sound waves, right? You know,
yeah.
I feel like growing up with Bill Walton as your dad, you're going to be open to anything out there as, like, potentially psychedelic as it could possibly be. So if Luke said that he understands whales, I would doubt him for a couple seconds. But, you know, man, maybe this guy's onto something.
Yeah, yeah. And it would also make sense, as far as his assistant coach selection, that he would want to get different voices in the locker room. I think that's why Mermes is there, you know, because although – I think Mermes can speak whale because he's a merman. You know, I think his voice is on a higher register and he can probably communicate with bats. You know, he's more upbeat.
I think you're on to something here, Chris.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I'm doing my best over here. I'm trying to host a basketball podcast, but I'm talking about whales. Whale then.
Nice.
So one thing I wanted to see is as far as, Swaggy P's resurgence, do you feel like that is something that is going to be able to, come back post, you know, injury? Because, I mean, I've heard from people that, you know, Swaggy P is, you know, just on a hot streak, and that's not the first time that, that he's been on a hot streak, and maybe that might have been burnt. Maybe the reason he's playing better is just simply because he's, as Amin El Hassan puts it, he's, you know, faced with his NBA mortality because for the first time in his career, he's like, oh crap, I might be out of the league. Or maybe Luke Walton has been able to, you know, light a fire inside of him that Byron Scott, for whatever reason, wasn't able to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess I wanted to see, whether or not you guys think that that's something that's going to be sustainable and maybe something that'll come back once or if the Lakers do, you know, start to play at that higher level that they started out the season playing.
I think it's sustainable because those few options you said, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think it's a combination of those two things in terms of, one, he loves his coach and his coach is playing a system that tailors to him. The last time he played this well was under Mike D'Antoni, who played the proper offense and allowed him to be his Swaggy P self and shoot the ball from three. Byron Scott did not allow him to do that and had a problem with him just on a personal level, which was a problem. And then on top of that, as Amin said, he is playing for his basketball life. And I think that's going to continue to hang over him because the Lakers still have that stretch provision that they can use until his contract runs out. And because of that, he's going to have to show the effort. And even the last game, where even though he shot poorly, his defense was right there. He was 5 for 15, but he got fouled on like a couple of those three pointers that he didn't get called on. And then on top of that, we saw him play some intense defense. So, you know, you can tell that that guy's still trying out there. So I think he'll be able to rebound after his injury, unless it's a more severe injury than we know. So,
yeah, I think it's sustainable as well. And I'm going to point towards Luke and him having a good connection. I don't know how many times Nick Young has said in the locker room that he knows Luke really has his back and that he believes in him and he trusts in him. And I've never heard Nick say,
Shouldn't be so trustful of Lakers. It's gotten him in trouble.
It's true. Huh? You don't want to have that like really good relationship and transparency yet. But I think that would be the number one reason he's been playing so well. And I agree with the mortality aspect as well. And as far as yesterday's game, I do think it was a bit of a wake up call for him. He had that pump fake at the free throw line. And, you know, it's like, okay, I get it. The ball probably just kind of slipped out of your hand. And for whatever reason, your timing got off. But God, if that's a playoff game or something like that, I'm pretty darn sure that is not going to happen, because your focus is going to be at a penultimate level. Whereas yesterday, it's Brooklyn, things aren't going well. He was probably going through the motions, and then he had that little gaffe. So I think Luke lighting a fire under the entire team's butts was partially because of him having that literal slip up at the free throw line yesterday. And, you know, in the past, I think Nick Young would kind of laugh it off and just chalk it up to nothing. But in listening to his post-game remarks, he took that moment pretty seriously. So, I have faith in Swaggy P.
Uncle P.
Well, the last time someone had faith in Swaggy P, she found out that he was up to some dalliances. So we'll see how that goes.
Let me rephrase. I believe in Swaggy P.
There you go.
As long as you don't believe Swaggy P, I think you should be fine. As long as you're believing in him.
I can't win.
Neither can the Lakers.
Exactly. I set you up for that.
So, yeah, thanks. No, that was a softball. So I have a couple of things I wanted to touch on before we wrap up. And I have you guys talk a little bit more about the Lakers Legacy podcast. So now that it is December 15th, and, you know, free agents that were signed during the offseason can now be moved, is there anyone who you guys have your eyes on as far as, you know, maybe this is someone who we should move to the Lakers, maybe this is a guy who we should go out and try to get, maybe this is a guy that we should move on from who's already on your roster? And if you guys haven't been thinking that way, then I guess that means that you're content with the current roster, at least for now. You want to see things play itself out.
Well, obviously, we want to get rid of Luau Deng, but we're not sure if anybody else is going to take him because of his contract and because he's Luau Deng. But in terms of players we want, I think there's a whole ton of players. It's just trying to assess like what teams need, what the Lakers have in terms of Lou Will right now is probably our most attractive trade asset who we would be smart to try and shop.
He's so attractive. He has two girlfriends.
Exactly. He has a lot going for him, clearly. And, you know, the Lakers, he's not going to be a part of their long-term future. I mean, maybe down the line you could see him as like a Bobby Jackson type player for the Lakers once they actually get competitive, but at that point he's going to be like 33 anyways, so it would be wise if the Lakers shop him around to see what they can get. I have a couple man crushes around the league that I would want on the Lakers, because, you know, clearly Jordan Clarkson hasn't rounded out his shooting yet, so I think still getting like a 3-and-D guy would be essential. You know, the Magic are supposedly trying to shop Mario Hezonja. I would take a flyer on Mario Hezonja in a heartbeat.
But you guys just got rid of Kobe.
I want the Euro Kobe, and I miss it. But outside of Mario Hezonja, like, you know, on the Pistons, they have Stanley Johnson, who they haven't been playing for whatever reason. So I would take a flyer on Stanley Johnson. I don't know what it would take to get him, but if it takes Clarkson and Lou Will, I don't know. I'd think about it. And outside of that, you know, I guess it's really just seeing what players on teams out there are available, really. But I think a 3-and-D guy would be helpful. It would be helpful for the Lakers to also get like a stretch five, a big that can actually shoot, because none of our fours and fives can actually space the floor. So it would be cool to get that. You know, Donatus Monte Enos just got waived by the Rockets, or I guess the contract didn't get signed and he's an unrestricted free agent. I honestly don't know what the stipulations are on his weird situation, but if the Lakers could just pick up that guy and make him their new E.G. Anlian, I would like that too, because that would add a new dimension to their offense that they haven't had in terms of a big that can stretch the floor. So really, I'm kind of just looking at what young upside guys are out there that the Lakers could potentially add to their young core that right now are being underappreciated. So Stanley Johnson is one, Mario Hezonja. On the Raptors have a ton of guys that they're not using, like Bruno Caboclo, and they're not even using the rookie center right now. So I would be looking at those types of guys. But yeah, I don't know if Alan has anything else.
Well, actually, before Alan responds to that, I wanted to touch on a few of those. So I really like the Donatas Moniunis try, although, of course, the glaring red light is that we don't know what the status of his back is, and it sounds like it might not be such a hot thing. But, you know, I mean, his value has got to be at an all-time low. Isn't that a band?
An all-time low? Sounds like it.
Yeah, if his next contract isn't a minimum contract, I would be a little bit surprised. I would assume that his next contract is going to be, you know, not super duper high because of whatever back problems he might be having. Mario Hezonja, I think, was a really good guy who you listed, because I think that, you know, one, his play style is something that would fit well, into Luke Walton's sort of system, in the same way that Swaggy P, I think, has been able to conform his skill set and sort of, you know, be a little bit more, you know, smart about shot selection and work into the defensive system a little bit more, despite being a bit of a free radical. I feel like that's something that would definitely be viable. And plus, I think that there's that possibility for a bit of a slingshot effect that the Lakers, I think, came into the year with. I think that, you know, their situation was so bad that, you know, it's like a slingshot pulling it back, right? And then when you released it and started to move forward with a better coach, I think that the positive reaction was amplified, because it's like you're going from a hot tub and then jumping into the snow. It's like such a big disparity between bad and good, and I feel like that could mean something. And then Stanley Johnson to me is a guy who makes a little bit of sense as far as that is concerned, and I think it's interesting when you're thinking about, okay, moving Clarkson or Lou Will. I think both would maybe be too steep of a price, but then maybe you could target a guy like John Luehr, you know, alongside it, and then you would have that center that you talked about. And then last, I'm sorry, Alan, you're just gonna have to wait a little bit.
No worries.
Jonathan, you blew it, okay? All right. Luol Deng is good, man. Here's the problem. Okay. Here's the problem with Luol Deng and the Lakers, okay? Marvin Williams, right? He goes through years of mediocrity on the Atlanta Hawks. And you know why? He was playing the three, because Josh Smith was playing the four. He was playing out of position. Then you have a guy like Bob Covington right now. You know, I mean, he's being forced into playing the wing because they have all these bigs, and his shot's sort of deteriorating because, like, man, he's not supposed to be shooting. He's not supposed to be coming off the screens and trying to get away from forwards. He's supposed to be playing the four, where there's a real three next to him. And Bob Covington would be so much better if he could play for a team that he would get to play the four again, which is what he played in college. Luol Deng last year for the Miami Heat was terrible until Chris Bosh went out with his unfortunate circumstances. And Luol Deng started to play the four next to Hassan Whiteside, who's the man. Love Hassan. But, you know, I mean, Luol Deng already showed last year, guys, if I'm going to perform, it's going to be as a four. That's what stage of my career I'm in. And that's where the league is headed. It might have been okay when I was a little bit more athletic and the league was different for me to play the three. But right now, I am not going to be good if you play me at the three. And I mean, that's why it was sort of an eyebrow raising signing for me in the first place. And why I criticize that a little bit more than I criticize the Mozgov contract, because, you know, I think Mozgov makes a little bit of sense. So that is my two cents on Luol Deng. And finally, Alan, that initial question of, do you have your eye on anyone? It's now your turn.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Wait, no, actually, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
We talked about Kelly Olynyk actually on one of our episodes about a week ago. I feel like Boston's only playing him about 20 minutes per game right now, and they could definitely use some scoring punch off the bench. So that's where you could throw a guy like Lou over there, and then it does give us our stretch five. We definitely need a 3-and-D guy, and we need some help down low as well, because right now, I mean, Tarik Black is a great hustle player, and he's improved a ton compared to last year, but the guy is still about 6'6", 6'7", and it does hurt us on the glass quite a bit, and he can't shoot beyond about 6 or 7 feet. So those would be some positions that I would definitely be targeting. I like all the names that Jonathan threw out there. And to kind of pivot back to Luol Deng, he has looked a lot better the last couple games. Like when he's matched up against, now of course it's a guy like Luis Scola, where you see these two 30-something-year-old men going at it, but he has looked a lot better playing the four, taking guys off the dribble, getting into the paint really easily against them. So yeah, maybe it is just putting him in a different position. And Luke has talked about it recently, where the coaches need to get together and figure out where to put him in a place where he's going to be able to succeed. And we've seen a little bit of that. And obviously, statistically, he's improved tremendously over the last three games, since everything before that was pretty abysmal.
Hey, Chris, I have some other trade ideas for you.
Wait.
Specifically, yeah, go ahead.
So first, what about this trade idea? What about trading D'Angelo Russell for Kristaps Porzingis? All right, okay, go ahead.
I was going to ask
Kevin
you about...
Kevin Ding would do it.
Okay, Kevin Ding would definitely do it. For the Mavs, what would you guys give us for Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell? Because we could use some Justin Anderson and Dwight Powell. What would you want from us?
Oh, man, that's great. Okay, well, trade machine activated. Yeah. Ring, ring. Hey, Mitch, it's me, Mark Cuban, speaking for Donnie Nelson, because we all know that I'm the real general manager here.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up your roster really quick. So, for Justin Anderson, let's see. I assume Zubac is off the table.
for the impressions alone, yes, he's off the table.
Yeah.
How about you guys wanted Anderson and who else?
Dwight Powell.
Okay, so Anderson and Dwight Powell. I'm not sure if the money works, but maybe we can, you know, figure something out. For Luol Deng and Jordan Clarkson.
Really? You'd take Luol Deng?
Yeah, yeah. We love guys who can't actually play. I feel like Luol Deng is actually a guy who makes some sense on the Mavs.
I think I would seriously consider that.
Have you seen how Justin Anderson's been playing so far this year, though?
No, is he crap?
No, he's really good, but he has not played very well this year.
Okay. What about Dwight Powell? He's been solid, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been okay. They're both, like, you know, they've been all right. They're definitely guys who are supposed to be role players alongside stars, which I'm not sure if you've heard, but the Mavericks don't have any of those. So,
hey, but at least you got Harrison Barnes. I would love to have swapped the Luol Deng signing and gone for a max for Harrison Barnes instead. So at least you guys have that guy.
And it's 2 hours earlier there. You guys, I mean, Mark Cuban must have been waiting for that Kevin Durant signing and then called right away and then made that offer sheet. I mean, if you guys... Harrison Barnes had to drive across, or fly rather, across the United States to sign that contract, you know, and get that free agent signing on the books. You guys are in his backyard. You could have done that.
We could have, and I think we dropped the ball on that one, because I think when the Kevin Durant signing happened, we already had Luol Deng, so clearly we did not go as hard after Harrison Barnes as we should have, and instead we went after guys like Kent Bazemore and Luol Deng instead. And honestly, what Barnes got a $23 million contract, it's like a max. I would pay $6 million more to just have Harrison Barnes instead of Luol Deng, because Luol Deng is going to be deteriorating in the next 3 years, pretty much. So,
yeah, no, I mean, you guys could have just signed. I mean, on the other LA team, there's a stretch five who came from the Warriors, actually. So you guys could have had a
Maurice Spates.
yeah, you guys could have had Spates. You could have signed Festus Ezeli, who, you know, hasn't played so far this year, but, you know, we'll see what happens there. And you could have had Harrison Barnes. I mean, you guys could have basically had the mini Warriors. And, you know, we also picked up Seth Curry. You guys could have sprung for
I know,
Seth.
No, I know. Honestly, I mean, I don't want to go into a tangent and, like, draw this out, but yeah, we have some work to do free agency wise, and you know, our other co-host Tommy has talked about, I think it's time to get some fresh blood in the Lakers front office in terms of how to handle free agency, because that's an area we've been sorely lacking in creativity, just risks and taking high upside guys. And I feel like we've tried to, I mean, sadly this is playing it quote unquote safe, signing guys like Mozgov and Dang, but it has been, and there's been, and even in the way that they handled the Bazemore thing, you know, not even extending a qualifying offer. Like, I think it may be time for the Lakers to look and see the way that you're asking Luke to be creative, think outside of the box. Maybe they should start doing that with the front office as well. There's a really good scout right below Mitch named Ryan West, who, you know, maybe they could promote or something. I just think
that's the mini Warrior stuff right there.
Right there. Yeah. Sun. So I just think they need to tweak their mentality moving forward. But right now we are strapped with Mozgov and Dang for a little bit. So
yeah, the Lakers front office, I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but they're a little bit disoriented, and you know, there's some problems there, apparently, I've heard.
yeah, there are. I mean, it's a family drama, as you would typically find in LA, so it's fitting.
Well, live and die in LA. So the last question I had before we closed out for the podcast is, now that you've seen 25 games, has it been, 23, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 23 games in, now that you've seen a little bit more of this young core under different coaching, so now you know a little bit more what they're going to look like under the Luke Walton era. Do you guys, how confident are you in the different individual pieces of your young core? I mean, you guys have basically, it seems like you've gone 180 on Clarkson. I don't know about Julius Randle. So, yeah, I wanted to hear. So, about this young core, how confident are you moving forward without adding another big draft pick, without adding another big player acquisition? You know, are you a little bit more concerned now, or maybe you sort of understand the position that they're in and, you know, want it to play itself out a little bit more?
I think I'm fine with, like, I still have high hopes for D'Angelo Russell. I have high hopes for Brandon Ingram. You know, Julius Randle has always been a question mark. I have high hopes for Larry Nance because we know exactly who he's going to be. He's going to be a really solid role player, whether that's starting or coming off the bench. He was unexpected. You know, Zubats is still waiting in the wings. So we don't know what he's going to become. But in terms of the big core, Clarkson and Randle, we're not sure whether they can hit their high upside in terms of even being like a competitive team, starters on a competitive team or like a championship level team. So those two I'm not sure about. I don't think that means that they don't have any value at all. I think it's time, like we just talked about, maybe it's time for Mitch to get creative and consolidate that talent and try and find something that would fit a little bit more. And that doesn't mean like I've totally given up hope on Clarkson or Randle. It's like so early on in the season, but just in terms of their archetypes and who they've shown themselves to be, they just have a little more glaring problems that you typically want shored up. So for example, if I could use, like, who would I put in place of Randle and Clarkson? Like, back when we drafted Randle, I would have loved to have drafted Zach LaVine instead. It was like such a crazy high upside pick to draft Zach LaVine at number 7. But if we could have Zach LaVine right now, like, I would be through the roof, you know? Essentially, if I could, let's swap Randle and Clarkson for Hezonja and Aaron Gordon from the Magic, and I'd be very happy. But having said that, like, I still have high hopes for all the young guys. I think we just have to be more realistic in terms of maybe Clarkson is just the sixth man off the bench that does scoring, and maybe Randle is going to be just like a high energy type guy who, I don't know. I've just always been a little wary of Julius Randle, even though he kind of shut me up the first half of the season. I think some of his problems have resurfaced when D'Angelo went down. So I don't know what Alan's thoughts are, but
yeah, I think for both of those guys, Julius and Jordan, when their highs are high, it's great, but their lows are pretty low. You know, there isn't really like an in-between, just be an even keel player who is consistent. It's just one or the other. So it's kind of polarizing outputs, and you would just like to see both of them find their groove. So that's why I would still be hopeful for guys like Julius and Jordan, since they have showed us some great moments and some good stretches. It's not even like one ice game amongst about five or six. Mm-hmm. You'll see them play well consistently, but then when they get in that funk, like, it's really hard for them to snap out of it. So as far as like a law of averages type approach, I would predict sometime within the next five games, they're both going to come around and look pretty good. As far as D'Angelo and Brandon and Larry Nance, yeah, I'm in the same camp as you. I'm very confident in all those guys. And yeah, so I'm willing to be patient at this point. I don't think we need to jump the gun, even though we've been on this skid.
Yeah, yeah. It is. I feel like it is a little bit telling, though, that you guys are you guys had all those trade possibilities and that you would consider moving on from Randall and Clarkson, which I think are two of the biggest pieces of your young core. I think definitely, though, the smart decision is to wait and see what mm-hmm. happens as the year progresses. I think that it sounds like you guys agree with me, although, you know, of course, any 8-game losing stretch early on in the season is going to shake people's confidence a little bit in some young players. But, you know, for now, this is the Lakers roster. And also for now, this is, you know, the depleted young core of the Lakers Legacy podcast here. I guess, you know, maybe your other co-hosts, I'm not sure what happened there, but, you know, definitely excellent. And I feel like the next Lakers Legacy podcast, it's going to come full circle. So why don't you guys talk a little bit about your show before we wrap up here and we say goodnight. And a little bit about what you guys are hoping to do over at the Lakers Legacy podcast, representing the A-team on ABPN.
Well, I think Alan's done such a good job with his impressions that we fooled you into thinking that we have two other co-hosts. We actually only have one other co-host, and that's Tommy Alexander. So it's just us three.
But I thought there was there's one other dude who comes on a lot, though, right?
Oh yeah, so we're the Lakers Legacy podcast. You know, we like to delve into the topics that I guess most other podcasts don't. Like we like to do the forum stuff that people typically do on forums in terms of we'll delve into the hypothetical trades. You know, some people will turn a high nose at it. That stuff never happens anyways. But we like to do it as an exercise to just gauge people's values. And in just in case it happens, we're not surprised. You know, we like to attack all angles. We like to have fun on our show. But mostly we also just dissect the Lakers. And, you know, we like to see what's going on outside of just the on-court stuff. So we keep it light. We keep it fun. At Lakers Legacy Pod on Twitter. Follow us there. Obviously, we're on iTunes. We're on almightyballer.com, Stitcher, yada, yada. Alan, I don't know if you have anything else to say. Alan does a lot of our best impressions. Like sometimes you'll hear Luke Walton. Sometimes you hear Jordan Clarkson. Sometimes you'll hear Uncle P. Like, we got it all on this podcast. So definitely take a listen if you like your Lakers, but if you also like to have some fun. And we typically go off tangents and talk about whales and bats too. So there you go.
I think that you guys should definitely be listening to the Lakers Legacy podcast. These guys really know how to have a good time. I played some beach volleyball with them a little while back just to kind of get our minds off things. So if you want to listen to them and learn a little bit about the Lakers, I think that would be a good choice.
All right. There you go. Yeah, no, that was a really good input coming from head coach Luke Walton on a great Lakers podcast, the best Lakers podcast available. And if you want to listen to them or any of the other A-team podcasts, you can find us at blogtalkradio.com/ABPN or on almightyballer.com. Guys, I'm not sure if you knew this, but we're on pace for 1 million listens this month.
Wow. Damn.
Wow.
Right? So, you know, the server may or may not be performing super well because we have such high traffic, but, you know, I'm probably just going to end up cutting this because You know, it just doesn't really matter. Well, guys, Jonathan, I really appreciate you coming on. I really appreciate your wonderful insights. Alan.
Thank you.
You know, you were not too, I'm just kidding, man. No, you were great. Your impressions are great as always. So, this has been Almighty Ballin. It's actually Almighty Ballin NBA show now. So, you've been listening to the Almighty Ballin NBA show, with Chris Axman, me, your host, and the two hosts out of seven, I think, co-hosts on Lakers Legacy Podcast, Alan and Jonathan. So I really appreciate you guys coming on and talking Lakers with me. And, you know, we'll catch you next time. We want to talk about some Lakers.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks, man.
A-team, stay lit.
Lit.
There you go.
It should be called the Lit Team.
The Lit Team.